Good morning.
Morning, Sensei.
I'm going to talk about a subject that I've talked about before, but somehow it hit me that it wouldn't hurt to talk about it again. And that is, that's love in our practice, a word that you don't hear that often. And having written this talk last night, Dance Me to the End of Love, which is a song by Leonard Cohen I heard, so it was sort of prophetic that that happened to appear. So if I said the word love is rarely spoken in our practice, and I've mentioned her before, Angel Kodo Williams wrote in an article that she had written, the Dharma is limited. It does not mention love. But this, unfortunately, with the exception of Thich Nhat Hanh, who covers it extensively, we rarely hear it, especially in the West and in the groups that I've been in, the word love. Now, originally, the three tenets of the Zen peacemaker were not knowing, bearing witness, and compassionate action. And I would say within the last year or so, compassionate action has been changed to compassion and action, compassion and love in action. So it's sort of an acknowledgement, I guess, I don't know this directly, but it was sort of an acknowledgement that the word love was missing. So in this talk, I'm going to share my thoughts about love and Zen. And for me, I think that love arises out of attention. And I'm going to drag out my favorite poet. And this is a quote from The Summer Day, which I've used many times. But I just think that Mary Oliver's expressions are expressions of love, particularly love of being alive. So she writes in the poem Summer Day, I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down into the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which I have been doing all day long. I do know how to pay attention. If you've read any of her poetry, it'll be very clear how she has this ability to pay wonderful attention, and not only paid attention, but to express in a poem what that attention has revealed to her. So this, I think, is a beautiful description of falling in love with life through paying attention. Now, this is a story that I mentioned last week, actually. I don't remember what the context was. But again, in terms of paying attention. And it's a story of a Jewish woman who worked with Holocaust survivors in a program to provide support and comfort. And in this program, they had psychiatrists, psychologists, social workers, MDs, and one female volunteer. And in this area where they set this program up, they used tents, and it was set up in a way in which each particular helping person would have their own small tent, almost like Dyson, where a person who was interested in this service could come and see a doctor or a social worker or a psychiatrist. And the people that would come, there were waiting areas outside of each tent. And so the survivors would wait in chairs outside of each tent, waiting to see the counseling person. And after about a week, the number of people who were seeing the female volunteer, the woman volunteer, was almost double the number of people who came to see. It was double for the people that came to see the woman volunteer. So in other words, she was seeing twice as many people. So apparently a reporter came and to do a piece on this program. And in the process, he asked one of the women, waiting to see the volunteer, and his question was, why are so many people here? And the person said to the reporter, because she pays attention. So another way we would say this is because she bears witness. So I think that true attention is intimate. And it's when we allow all of the boundaries created by years of conditioning drop away and we become empty of fixed ideas, preferences, and conclusions. And what remains is simply intimate attention. All thoughts of helping, in this case for the volunteer, all thoughts of what it must have been like, all thoughts about what am I going to say, etc. All of this part of ourselves is quiet, and we pay attention through no filters, just a direct attention. So this state, this open-heartedness, is a place of joy, tenderness, compassion, and intimacy, which flows through us. It's love without a container, which has no location, but everywhere. It's me, it's you. Love without barriers. And it's the deepest expression of intimate attention. What could be more intimate than being with somebody who is just interested in listening with no agenda, no barriers? And I think that sometimes we have this experience with a good friend, somebody who we know will just receive us as we are and listen to what we have to say. And this experience is quite intimate. So Rumi said, your task is not to seek for love, but merely to seek and find all the barriers within yourself that you have built against it. And the seeking really is our practice, seeing beyond the barriers. And those are the barriers that keep us from being intimate with somebody else, but they're also the barriers that we have between ourselves, toward ourselves. So the love that I'm talking about is not a passive love, I don't think. It's active. And many of you will remember case 46 from the Mumin Khan, which is the gateless gate. And it's about stepping forward from the top of the 100-foot pole. And so if you could imagine someone climbing up the pole, and at the top is the experience of realization. So the koan goes, an eminent master of old said, even though one who is sitting at the top of the 100-foot pole has entered into realization, it is not yet real. He or she must step forward from the top of the pole, step forward from the top of the pole, and manifest his or her body throughout the world in the 10 directions. So, learning to open our hearts, getting to the top of the pole, and having the experience of an open heart, that's just the first part of the journey. This love must be actualized. And from a metaphoric way of looking at it, we must step off the pole into the grit and grime of everyday life. What use is having an open heart if we don't, and again, metaphorically, if we don't leave the monastery? We don't step out into the world, we just enjoy our realization separate from the world. So we have to step off the pole. So love must be lived out in our everyday lives. And in so doing, we must welcome all of the ingredients that life presents. We must keep emptying ourselves so we do not get caught in picking and choosing who or what to love. We have to let go of who or what and just be love itself. Just be open-hearted. And you'll remember this quote by Bernie Glassman, if everything is one, then no one and no thing is left out. You are open to everything, no matter what or who that is. Our practice is to remain open-hearted in those situations. Now, being open-hearted doesn't mean we accept everything. You know, sometimes being open-hearted is saying no, is working against something. So open-hearted doesn't mean that you accept evil, that you don't try and do something about evil. But you're reacting, or you're more not reacting, but you're responding to circumstances with an open-heartedness. And because we're open-hearted, we see clearly. So in a sense, to love is to live a life of service to all beings. To be a service, we must be grounded in the oneness of life. No one being served, no one providing the service, without embodying this awareness, we are more likely to do harm than good. And of course, the opportunity to serve is everywhere. There's social upheaval, war, pestilence, racism, poverty, religious disputes. But being open-hearted isn't confined to those bigger issues. It's also related to family, to community. How do we live out ourselves in the context of our family? Can we do that with an open heart when we can't stand our brother? Or we don't like the way our uncle talks when he comes to visit? You know, that seems small, but it's just as big, just as important as paying our attention open-heartedly in a much larger context. Now, another aspect of this is, in order to serve best, we must be self-aware, mindful of the parts of ourselves that can interfere with keeping an open heart. Personal history, anger, fear, desire, hate, jealousy, divisiveness, shame. And, you know, the list is much longer than that. But in order to be open-hearted, we must work with those aspects of ourselves. Now, Zen, which is a very open-hearted practice, can help us with those things. But there are many other ways that we can work to heal those parts of ourselves. And many of you know that, the various forms of psychotherapy, groups, AA, all of the different ways that are included in this work beyond just our practice. Now, these parts of ourselves, particularly the ones that we find detestable, if that's a word, the parts that we detest, the parts of us that we turn away from, that we block out, those parts of us also require loving attention. Now, this is important. It's not necessary to wait until we get to the top of the pole and then all of a sudden our heart is opened. I mean, certainly there's a process, but it's a process. And the more we do the work, our heart opens and it opens and it opens and it opens. We don't have to wait for the final opening. So I like to think that we don't have to become enlightened or wait to become enlightened to live an enlightened life. And there are just some simple examples. I mean, there are thousands of them, but ago I saw it was rainy and the steps were slippery, and these two older gentlemen were helping each other up the steps so neither one of them would fall. You know, other examples would be if you have a friend who's sick and you tend to that person, Carol, we can send our love in various forms. Today we're sitting for her. Well, that's an act, a group act, a Sangha act of love that we're extending to Carol. Holding the hand of a mother who lost a child. Not talking, not giving advice, but holding the hand of a Holocaust survivor. Some of the ways we love can be more dramatic. A fireman running into a burning building to save a child. So I think you get the point, but there's just a million ways every day that we can extend of an act of love. Just a smile, just an open-hearted smile, can affect the rest of our day and someone else's day. So Rumi said, "The minute I heard my first love story, I started looking for you, not knowing how blind I was. Lovers don't finally meet somewhere. They're in each other all along." And that's the intimacy of love. We're in each other all along. So Zen practice is a way to see through our blindness, to open the door to love, to allow ourselves to become open-hearted. So I wish good luck to all of us to keep letting our heart open.